the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. During the break, Miss Shelley Wright was able to do a little bit of research about this case that she mentioned in the last hour when a ghost played a role in a trial in the late 1800s. What were you able to dig up there, Shelley?
Well, the murder victim, Zona Hester Shue, appeared to her mother 4 weeks after she died and said that her husband did it, that he had killed her in a fit of rage and he had broken her neck. And to prove this, the ghost turned her head completely around until it was facing backwards. And so at the trial, they tried to, the defense tried to not talk about it. The prosecution, you know, anyway, it was all brought up. It was all brought out. They believed the mother. The husband was convicted. He was sentenced to life in prison. A mob was formed, a lynch mob. And unfortunately, they didn't get to hang him. But he still spent years in prison. But it's the it was a case in 1897, and it was it was the testimony of a ghost that was accepted in a murder trial. And, in Greenbrier County, West Virginia. She's also known as the Greenbrier Ghost. And I was looking a little bit more, and there is a little marker in the cemetery where she's interred, talking about it being the only known case in which testimony from a ghost helped convict a murderer. And after this, the ghost was never seen again. And her mother never recounted her story. She just never recanted. She always said this is exactly how it happened. So, 1897, Mr. Warren.
Wow, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Right there in weird West Virginia.
Weird West Virginia, Greenbrier County.
The land of Mothman.
Yes.
Wow. Well, you know, it's funny because you always hear that you have much more to fear from the living than the dead. And it also, you know, during the break, I've been thinking more about this story that I mentioned about all of these bodies that have disappeared from the cemetery here in Puerto Rico, where I am. And for those of you who are just tuning in, I'm broadcasting from the Bermuda Triangle base here in Puerto Rico, and Forrest and Shelley are at the studio in Asheville. And I was talking about this the cemetery and this sleepy mountain town called Garabo here in Puerto Rico, where 40 people just ended up disappearing. We're talking dead bodies here, disappearing from a cemetery. And gosh, you know, it just becomes creepier and creepier the more I think about it, because, you know, this is an area that's very much in the rural countryside. The mountains are spooky around here anyway. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that one of the weird things about Puerto Rico is that, yes, the oceans and the beachfront property here is very touristy and everybody's having fun and a good time. But there is a large chain of mountains that run right through the middle of the island. And I find it especially intriguing that you can find mountains that are over 4,000 feet tall here, and Asheville in the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains is on average around 3,000 feet. So there are mountains right here on this little island that are taller than the ones in Asheville, and yet you go right off the coast of Puerto Rico and you have the Puerto Rico Trench, which is the deepest point in the Atlantic Ocean and the second deepest point on Earth, where it's over 30,000 feet deep. So you have this extreme geographic, geological diversity here. Extremely deep points that are close to, by comparison, extremely high points. And when you get to some of these mountains, I mean, it's really, really rough going. I mean, you're talking about single-lane roads that are right on the edge of cliffs. There are obviously no guardrails. A lot of the roads are dirt. You'll be driving along, and suddenly you'll encounter a landslide, and you know it'll be difficult to get by. It's sort of spooky just driving through the mountains in general, and you have a lot of really run-down, poor places in the middle of the island like that. And the idea of a guy like me, and I'm, you know, the most outstanding gringo you can imagine. You know, I'm pale, I'm tall, I don't speak Spanish that well, I'm learning, but I'm far from a Spanish speaker. To go to a place like that and start snooping around, might be a death wish. Because if these 40 bodies are gone from the cemetery, and anything other than them reanimating and digging out of the ground and walking around has happened, the reality is there are humans there who are crazy enough to dig up 40 people and do something with those bodies that we probably wouldn't approve of, and they definitely don't want to be caught. So can you imagine if I popped up there snooping around asking questions, how outstanding that I would be? And I could easily get murdered if I did that. Mm. I mean that's no BS. I mean, it's one thing when you're running around here asking about UFO stories or chupacabra or ghosts and spirits, and all, but what if, like, the cops are in on it? You know, what if there's some kind of corruption? And if I got into the middle of that, being murdered might be the least of it. I could actually end up being abducted, and I could be in one of these ancient, dark, magical dungeons where they are deciding to torture me and include another body to their collection, right?
Or use you as a sex slave.
Oh, really? What makes you think they would do that, Shelly?
I don't know. You're tall. You've
got good stock.
Yes, you've got good stock. Yes.
Well, that could be. That's what it all is. It's a big sex slave ring.
That's it. Well, for one, because the other bodies are dead.
Yeah. But, you know, most of Puerto Rico is a place full of extremely friendly, open people, and you'll have the best time of your life. But there are other places where, I don't know, it's creepy around here.
There's a dark underbelly.
Yeah, so, I probably shouldn't go there.
Probably not. The name of the game is Don't Get Dead. So how long did you say it took for these 40 bodies to disappear?
Well, it appears to me from the story here that I don't think they give an exact number, but or like, you know, exact time frame. But I think here that it's just sort of like an overnight thing. Like basically, within one or two nights, people realized that all these tombs were open and everybody was gone. And so I don't know if anybody was keeping a close eye on the cemetery, but you get the idea that it was something that happened very quickly, like some kind of task force moved in and just cleaned the bodies out one night.
And yeah. It was just one at one cemetery?
Yeah, at one particular cemetery, which was built in 1912. And so what that means is that somewhere out there, very possibly still on this island, there are 40 dead bodies in a room somewhere, and who knows what's being done with them. But I would say the same type of people who would do that are the same type of people that you wouldn't want to get a hold of you.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. So honestly, the more I use my imagination, the creepier the story becomes. And of course, Let me compound that a little bit with some of the updates that I want to give you about things I've been discovering here just over the past week or so on the island. before I get to the fact that, okay, there were a couple of ladies from Chicago who came down here to do a bit of an expedition with me because these are big UFO enthusiasts, let me tell you about an experience that I had. There are, according to all the official, you know, records and factoids, there are 7 bioluminescent bays, bodies of water that glow brightly at night in the entire world, year round. Okay, and 3 of those are here on Puerto Rico. So Puerto Rico is the most bioluminescent piece of land on planet Earth, if you will. And there are 2 of them on the East Coast, and then there's 1 of them here on the West Coast. And I had been to the 2 on the East Coast, and so I had to go to the 1 on the West Coast. So Lauren and I made plans to go check out the bio bay. So I now can say I've been to all 3 of the bio bays here in Puerto Rico. Well, we went to this very small little town, which is probably about 45 minutes to an hour from the Bermuda Triangle base here. And we got hooked up with a boat that would take us out there at night. And you actually can get into the 1 on the West Coast. They no longer will let you get into the 1 on the East Coast, or the ones on the East Coast. So we arrived probably like a couple hours early in a little town next to the dock where you get on the boat to go out to the bio bay. And so we had some time to kill. So we went into a bar. And Lauren and I were the only people in this bar, other than, of course, the bartender. And so we struck up a conversation, and we started talking to him about the UFO sightings in the area. And he was born here, and we had a great conversation. He'd heard a lot of interesting things. And at one point, the door opens, and a police officer comes walking into the bar. And he's in police uniform. He's got a pistol on his side. And he walks up to the bar, and he said, "Hi, I'm so-and-so." And he puts out his hand and introduces himself to me and Lauren. So he strikes up a conversation with us at the bar there. And I figured, well, this is a good opportunity for me to ask this guy about encounters that he may have had with other officials in the island that may be a little bit more clandestine, shall we say. We're going to take a break. When we get back from the break, though, I'll tell you what this police officer told me about what he has experienced being right there on the edge of breaking dramatic phenomena and how it applies to the other mysterious stuff on this island. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Stick around for that and a lot more when we come back. You're listening to the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. strangers around the globe. Thanks for spending your Saturday night with us. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and, well, this is the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. Before we get back to this story about the cop that I was able to talk to, you know, we're always telling everybody about the Sunshine Simple solar generator for the home and how you can save hundreds of dollars every month on your power bill. But, you know, we just made a sale of one of these to a single 67-year-old retired teacher. And she said she was tired of not having power or communications when these storms hit. And she said that she has a gut feeling this is going to be a bad year, which actually is supported by some science because, you know, already the tropical storm season is hit early. And she says it gives her peace of mind that she can stay in contact with her family and her computers and cell phone and all that stuff's working. I'm looking at her email right now, and she's thanking us for making a great product like this. She said a woman died last year as there was no phone service or power, and she never wanted to be in that position. And as a matter of fact, Mobius has a friend who died in 2005. In a storm here, well, right there in Asheville, a tree trapped her in her house, and she had no power or phone, and she got hit by some kidney stones, and it took her 3 days. She couldn't get any access to emergency services, and she died. I remember, you know, when all of my friends got hit by that big storm in New York, they were in terrible positions just because they weren't able to keep their cell phones charged. It's something that simple. So look, it costs $1,500 to get a Sunshine Simple. You can make payments on it. There's a no interest plan there. Just, you know, if you want to save money or make sure that you have your own independent source of power, remember, it needs no fuel, okay? So you don't have to worry when the fuel runs out. Go look at the video, please, at sunshinesimple.com. It takes us a while to make them and get them shipped, so do it right now. Okay, so I was talking with this police officer and this bar.
Right.
And I was asking him if he had ever had run-ins with any kind of strange, shall we say, military/clandestine forces in Puerto Rico. And he said, oh, yeah, absolutely. You know. So he starts talking about the times there have been crashes and the military would move in and take over all authority. And he was saying that, let me repeat this because if you didn't hear the show last week, I was with a fisherman and we were going down the coast of Puerto Rico. And at one point he points out what looks like a military base. And it's sitting right off the coast, the southern coast, and it's restricted access. In fact, we have a picture of it posted right now at speakingofstrange.com. It looks like a bunch of white buildings. There's a big white dish there of some sort. And this police officer said that at one point a few years ago, he had to conduct some business with a friend of his who was working on this base. And he went to the base. They checked his ID, they searched him, made sure he didn't have anything that was unauthorized, and then he was able to go onto the base and meet with his friend, but they still wouldn't even let him go into the base. So I asked this police officer, well, what kind of a base was it? Was it Navy? And he said, I don't know. I said, what do you mean you don't know? You didn't see any of their uniforms, any of their signs? He says, no. He says, everybody's plain clothes. None of the vehicles are marked. Everything is blank. He said that he knew that these officials and these sort of military-oriented bodies were all around the island. But he thought, even he thought, it was weird that none of them are marked and that it's almost like the truly secret parts of the military or the government are the ones that don't even have a name, right? They don't have a name. They, well, not one that you know. They don't have any insignias. And the photograph that you will see at speakingofstrange.com, and we're just going to have it up for a little while there. The photograph is the only photograph that I could potentially legally even take of this facility, because you can't get any closer to it than this. Now, you can go to Google Earth and you can get some shots of it from the air if you know where to look. This guy has probably spent over an hour telling me that it doesn't matter if you're a police officer, that at any point in time you can get a certain code which says, butt out, you know, this is not your business, this is some other agency of the federal government that's involved, and they have nothing to do with it at that point. So I thought that was pretty cool that I got to talk to a guy who is entrusted with that much authority on the island, who could tell me what it was like sort of from an inside perspective to have to deal with these mysterious bodies. Now, when these two ladies came down here from Chicago who wanted to spend some time with me doing research, one of the things I did was charter a boat, and we took it out onto the ocean, and I was able to show them during the daytime the pathway that a lot of these UFOs take when they come in, and I was able to point out some of the submarine paths that are apparently leading to this base next to the UFO lagoon, okay, the Laguna Cartagena. And, of course, we had a wonderful day out on the ocean. It was nice and beautiful and sunny, and the water was clear. And after that, we got into a car, and I took them to the Laguna, and then I took them down a highway, which is close to the Laguna, Highway 303, which is known as the extraterrestrial highway. And that is because that at one point on this highway, there is actually a green sign there that was placed there by the mayor of the town of Lajas. And it's a green sign that says Ruta Extraterrestrial. It basically means extraterrestrial highway. It's got a little flying saucer on it, and I've talked about this before on the show. So it's almost like a touristy thing in a way, because you're thinking, why else would that be there? You know, because the mayor of Lajas has said that he knows there are so many sightings that this is something that maybe will help the economy. So we're driving to this sign, because it's the thing, you know, you stop there and you get your picture taken in front of the sign. So that, to that extent, it's kind of like Area 51. And as we're going down the road, we pass this bar, and the bar had an alien painted on the side of it. And I had been into that bar once before, but there was a guy there who didn't speak any English whatsoever, and I wasn't in very long. But I figured, hey, this is another neat site to stop and do a little photo op. So we go into the bar, and the guy walking behind this, or the guy working behind the bar, did speak English. And we go up to the bar, and we're asking him about UFO sightings in the area, and there have been a lot of them. And then we notice that there's something behind the bar on the shelf. It's a jar, and it's full of liquid, kind of a discolored, nasty-looking liquid. And I said to the bartender, "What's in the jar?" And he said, "Oh, that's an alien." And I said, "What?" He says, "Yeah, that's an alien." We're going to take a break. When we come back, I will I'll tell you what happened after that. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is the show where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual. This is Speaking of Strange. Strange. in the jar at the bar on the extraterrestrial highway, Route 303 here in Puerto Rico. Obviously, an alien. That's what the bartender tells me. It's an alien. Go check out speakingofstrange.com if you want to see a photograph of this alien. Also, go to joshuapwarren.com. We say to him, what do you mean it's an alien? And he says, well, the guy who used to own this bar died in a motorcycle crash 9 months ago. And his prized possession was this jar. And I said, well, where did this jar come from? And he says, we're not really sure. He said, this guy was really into aliens, which is why, you know, he's got the bar right here with the alien painted on the side of it. And said, you would have liked him. You guys would have really hit it off. We don't know exactly where he got this from, and we don't know exactly what it is, but we know that it's supposed to be an alien. And we said, well, can we have a closer look? And the guy goes, well, I don't usually even take it off the shelf. But I will for you. So here I am with my two guests from Chicago. And boy, you can imagine they are about to explode with excitement. Lauren is here. He takes down this jar off the shelf very, very carefully and places it there on the counter. And inside is what looks like a bunch of kind of shriveled flesh. And we're taking photographs of it, of course. But it almost looks like that whatever was originally in there had sort of shrunk and scrunched up in a way. And it was difficult to tell what this thing looked like originally. Now, Forrest, you and Shelley have seen one of the photographs. What are your thoughts on this thing?
Just from the view I saw, you can tell there's something in there, but you really can't tell what it is. I mean, it's like Tom Biscardi's like Bigfoot in the ice. You can't really tell what it is. I want to touch it. I want to open it up and see what's in there.
Yeah. All right. What do you think, Shelley? Right.
Looks like something they'd sell in that shop, Oddities. It looks really cool, and like there's more than one thing. Like maybe, I don't know, Mama Alien and Baby Alien. I mean, it just, it does look very kind of shriveled, and it's very, very hard to see.
And that was the only thing that was of that kind in this bar. And by the way, this bar, it's not like some souvenir shop or something, okay? There are no T-shirts or keychains or cups or any of that kind of stuff for sale. I mean, you don't even find that really anywhere on this island. They don't sell paranormal stuff. It was just a straight-up bar. The only thing that made it outstanding was that there was an alien painted on the outside, and here you have a jar on the shelf on the inside that they said had an alien. So I asked the guy, I said, can I purchase this? You know, I said, I have a museum. Can I buy it? And he said, I seriously doubt it. He goes, but let me get the guy's son, because it would be up to him. So he goes and he gets the son of the gentleman who is deceased, and I asked his son, and his son didn't speak any English, but I asked his son if he would consider selling it, and he said no. We didn't even want to hear a price. It was just like beyond the concept of money, that he would never let whatever was in that jar go. So I don't know how long that's going to be there. It's probably been there for a while. But, you know, if you decide to come here and go on a West Coast expedition and let me take you around, I will take you to this place and you can see it for yourself and see what you think. But let me tell you some other weird things that happened when I was running around with these ladies from Chicago. So when you go out to the UFO lagoon here on the West Coast, there is a tower that has been built nearby that gives you a nice view. It's like a 3 or 4 story wooden tower. And then there's sort of a pier that goes out next to the laguna. Now, 90% of the laguna is covered with cattails, so you can't see much of it. And the parts that you can see are, they sort of come and go with the rain. So if it rains a lot, it'll be very full. If it doesn't rain so much, there'll be like a lot of mud and just like dry, sun-baked ground on the outskirts that you have to walk across before you get to any of the water. And there are tons of birds everywhere. The birds love the place. So at one point, I was posing on the pier next to the laguna with these ladies, and one of the ladies accidentally knocked my Trifield Natural EM meter down onto the edge of the laguna.
Oh.
And this is like a $300 meter. And it didn't go into the water.
And she was never heard from again.
Right. But it hit, you know, that sun-baked mud next to the water. And you're not really even supposed to go down there legally. But I had to get my meter back, right? So and of course she was very apologetic. She was, you know, really disturbed that she'd done that accidentally. So I walked down onto the sun-baked earth, and another one of the ladies is like, well, if he's going, I'm going, right? So the two of us go walking down there across the dirt. I get my meter. The meter was fine. But, hey, I'm down there, so I figure I'm going to walk out even further now. So I go walking out into the UFO lagoon, and she's behind me. She actually at one point stepped into like a big soggy section and her whole foot sunk. But I always stayed sort of on the harder ground. So we're out there walking around and all of a sudden, boom, white unmarked car appears.
Oops.
Yeah, on a road right next to the laguna. Pulls up, sits there and looks at us. Then a helicopter appears. Helicopter flies around. Then one of the ladies goes, what's that? And we look up, and there's a balloon floating overhead that seems to have some kind of a, I don't know, if it's an instrument pack or what the heck it is, hanging off the bottom of it. All this stuff hits at once. We got out of there. And after that, you know, the car turns around and leaves. So it was almost like, you know, we were detected being on this ground, walking out to this point, right? So we decided to go back out there at night. And you're not even really supposed to be at the laguna after dark. So we go out there that night, and there's this trail that takes you right out into the middle of the laguna so that you have water on the right side and on the left side. We go out there about 10 o'clock at night. The sky is as clear as you can imagine. It's absolutely quiet and desolate and dark. And the woman who's with me, from the one of the ladies from Chicago, because one lady didn't go, the other lady did. The one who went with me is a professional photographer. She's taken photos in all kinds of scenarios. She's been at rock concerts. She got hired to do all the photos for Glenn Danzig's concerts. And she's taken photos under various lighting conditions. She says to me, what the heck? My camera just stopped working. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, I've never seen this before. And she had like a really nice, big, expensive camera, a big SLR. And she goes, I've never seen this happen. My camera's not working. My camera's not working. And I hear her say that, and I look up, and there it is, this big white light in the sky right above us, and it goes very smoothly moving across the sky from left to right. I'm pulling my cell phone camera out, and it's not showing up because it's bright to my eye. It's bright to her eye, but it just won't show up on the cell phone. This thing moves across the sky at a really nice pace, and then over probably about 45 seconds, and then disappeared. And then her camera started working again. Now, was that a was that a craft? I don't know that if it was a craft or not. It was definitely a UFO. It was an unidentified flying object, and it appeared over the Laguna at the exact same time that her camera stopped working. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you about, I'll mention an update for you on this UFO photograph that I'm in the process of obtaining. And then also I have an update for you on cryptozoology in North Carolina. A new photograph has emerged, and some say it's historic. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange. We call it the Dark 30 Hour, and this is when we dig into the more outrageous and controversial stuff, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended, some of the more sordid and seedy news, which is why we save it for late at night. But this hour, I've been telling you about some of the strange stuff happening here in Puerto Rico. And you may recall on last week's show, I told you that I happened upon a scenario in a bar. It's funny how many of my stories begin that way. And the bartender had a photograph of a UFO taken during daytime on her telephone by a friend of hers. And I said, I got to get this thing, I got to analyze it. Well, I still don't have that photograph, and I could go down a long list of just weird obstacles that have been popping up that play into me getting this photograph. I won't do that right now, but it's quite frustrating, I must say, because my plan is to be able to get this thing, analyze it, and hopefully put it on the website so all of you can look at it. But there has just been one problem after another with getting this thing sent to me technically, and I am pretty much at this point on the verge of just going to see her again and saying, bring it up on your cell phone again and let me take a picture of it off of your cell phone screen, and without going into details, you know what I'm talking about, Forrest, how these, like, series of highly synchronistic obstacles arise when you're trying to get something that you really want.
Right.
Yeah. But there is a photograph that was sent to me recently that has a connection to a story that I read on the show last week about the Beast of Bladenborough. The Beast of Bladenborough was a creature responsible for a string of deaths in Bladenborough, North Carolina, in the winters of, it began the winter of 1953, and then it went to 1954 there. And nobody knows what this thing was. It killed hundreds of animals. In some cases, supposedly, the blood was sort of sucked out. Some call it the vampire beast of Bladenborough. Well, there's been a resurgence of animal deaths just over the past month there in Bladenborough, and people are once again saying the beast is back. Well, the funny thing is, to my knowledge, individuals who have no knowledge of our conversation about the Beast of Bladenborough sent me a photograph. It actually came to me from a friend who listens to the show, and this is a photograph that was supposedly taken in Canton, and I have talked to the guy who put it on his Facebook page and says that his coworker captured it. It's posted at speakingofstrange.com right now. It is a photograph that supposedly came from a hunting cam, like a sport type cam that you put on a tree, and it shows a big, scary looking panther like black cat. Now, Forrest, you've seen it. Shelley, you've seen it. Am I exaggerating here?
No, you're not.
No. But, I mean, I've seen a couple different photos that supposedly came from Fines Creek and different things that show a mountain lion out that way. And the Texas company said, oh, yes, I found photographed this on my back porch last week. And doing research on that one, that photo has been all over the web, people saying they've seen it at different places, but it might not be the same with this one. I hope it actually is there. I mean, because it would be actually hard photographic evidence. There are big cats here in the mountains.
Yeah, and you know, and then you bring up a great point, Forrest, because usually when these photographs appear like this, it is a hoax. It's some kind of a picture that somebody's just pulled off the internet, and they say, oh, you know, this came from my backyard. In this particular case, the guy who posted it on the internet has told me that it was taken by his coworker, and so he says he is in the process of getting his coworker to contact me, and that will make all the difference if I can find somebody who's willing to tell me and hopefully come on this radio program and tell us I took this picture. And if that's the case, it's going to lend a lot of possible credibility to what you're looking at here. Okay, we're going to take that break. When we come back, yes, it will be the Dark 30 Hour. Not for the kiddies. Not for the easily offended. Tune out right now if you think you can't handle it. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Oh,